Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
New Hampshire Wildlife Heritage Foundation and International Wildlife Crime Stoppers. This podcast is brought to you in part by Sovereign Sportsman Solutions. As conservation officers, we know just how important technology is in this day and age. S3 is a cutting-edge and trusted vendor that provides state agencies with licensing, mobile, CRM, marketing, law enforcement, and event management solutions all in one place. They are dedicated to benefiting the resource, so check out the link in the show notes to sign up for their newsletter and get the industry insights, news, and content that can keep you up to date on the tech that helps drive conservation into the future. A Game Warden's children's book, titled A Cowboy in the Woods, is a story of Bobby, a boy who spends the whole summer observing wildlife, writing notes in his notebook, fishing with his dad, and keeping track of all the animals in his neighborhood. While trying to solve a neighborhood mystery, what he discovers is more than just an appreciation for the natural world. The idea for this book came from Wayne Saunders' own childhood experiences, growing up and exploring the woods and streams and lakes and ponds of his native New Hampshire. The love of nature instilled in his childhood led him to a career as a conservation officer. Wayne Saunders is a retired lieutenant conservation officer from the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Lindsay Webb is a naturalist, wildlife biologist, and environmental educator. Together, they collaborated with wildlife artist Ashley Mayers to produce The Cowboy in the Woods, the story of a boy whose love of nature leads him in unexpected directions. Available at wardenswatch.com and Amazon. Warden's Watch Podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line Podcast and the Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon.
We love our children. We protect them. We guide them. We prepare them for life in the world. With all that we do, from deep in our hearts, we cannot control all things. Life-threatening illnesses and disabilities affect far too many of our children each year. While we cannot change the circumstance, we can make dreams come true. Dreams to provide hope, to provide spiritual healing and strength, to provide moments of happiness and relief in the hardest of times. We can give a glimmer of light and hope in a time of darkness and despair. Join huntofalifetime.org to help make dreams come true, to provide hope for children with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Hunt of a Lifetime is a nonprofit organization fulfilling dreams for hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Visit huntofalifetime.org to learn how you can make a difference.
We'll be right back. Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experience of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch.
Warden's Watch, Episode 71, Jeff Bale, Interview Interrogation, Part 2. And I hope you guys wet your whistle on Part 1 to get a feel for interview and interrogation. Very important. Jeff gives us some skill sets that are just, it's great to hear. Great for you guys to hear, even if you're not in law enforcement, because it's a communication skills. Empathy is a huge thing, to feel empathy for people. And that's part of search and rescue. I certainly, when I'm dealing with the families, I felt empathy for them, real empathy. And even, you know, when you bring that into it, being human, I think, helps in the interview and interrogation part, to being able to read people. John, I mean, certainly game wardens start to read people. That's a skill set that is priceless when it comes to doing the job as a game warden, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's our bread and butter. I mentioned on the first episode with Jeff, and such a great story. The difference between a great game warden and an exceptionally great game warden is interview and interrogation skills, and being in that upper 1% of being able to read the vibe of the person you're dealing with, suspect or witness, and adjust your style to be, like you said, empathetic. Be direct when you need to be. And more importantly, be able to fill and flow and be patient. And
which I don't have.
I know from my career. I know. Yeah. Right. And we all know, you and I both, early in our careers, we're so gung ho. Are we patient? Do we listen long enough? Do we take the long enough pause? We don't.
No.
We learned the hard way. We got beat several times and lost cases because of it. But this is something that should happen in the academy, and it doesn't happen in all academies. We have a basic class like this in the California Fish and Wildlife Officers Academy, thankfully, but it's a basic starting class, and it's something you can continue to tune up on your whole career, either through learning around you and through your personal experiences on investigations, or continuing to go to refresher classes. And this and Jeff's stories just drive it home, because he's an exceptional interviewer, and it comes out in the great casework he did throughout his career and continues to do. So this is a good one, and critical and exciting, because some of the stories that come out in these interviews, how you get people to crack, and the other stuff you didn't know that you find out through a good interview, is mind-blowing. So great one. You guys will enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. And remember to tell your friends about the Warden's Watch podcast. Like minds think alike. If you like Warden's Watch, please share. And then don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on, because that helps other people you don't know say, hey, this is a really good podcast. So again, Warden's Watch, episode 71. And I think every case you did in your state, that just, all I can see is just big buck, big buck, big buck, big buck, you know, stacking them up, big cases. Because your state is known for that. And just for everybody that sees this on Patreon, you got to see Jeff's background. He has a virtual background, and I keep looking at it. I'm like, boy, there's got to be some big deer in that field. That's a gorgeous, gorgeous view. Good representation of some dynamic habitat.
I just pulled the cameras from that. They're all still alive, I tell you that.
Awesome. Just gorgeous, gorgeous.
But there's gorgeous. There's a lot of deer case. I had deer cases, but this stuff is just so, it just spills into every walk of a warden's life. I handled 20 fatal boat accidents in my career here.
Wow.
And the skill set is incredible, how it goes back and forth and back. It's the same.
Right.
You know, it really is the same. You know, I play guitar, a little guitar, that's it. And how many notes can you get out of that? How many permutations of a chord can you get? there's no end to it. You just keep on doing and changing things around and changing things around. I think that's one of the main things I like the kids to get out of the classes and even the experienced officer is that there's just no end to it. Mm-hmm. Just stick the stuff you're doing right now is correct. Just try to stick some new stuff in there, change around different, create new pathways. Mm-hmm. I mean, they actually say that if you start using if you're right handed, you start using your left hand for a while from time to time, pretty soon you create a new pathway and that becomes a lot easier if you just keep doing that. Yeah, that's skill set. I didn't know that was going to happen, Wayne, that I would be really, really start to get real good in all aspects of it, no matter what the situation was, even talking to a defense attorney, right. You know, being cryptic with him, be the same thing as being cryptic with a frog hunter, you know, or somebody in the state park that beat up somebody or knifing or something like that. It's all there. And I really, again, I'll come back to that. It was so nice of our chiefs to give us that money and let us develop that program and train everybody. And that led to me meeting other people, other researchers, reading other research, mm-hmm. other departments hearing about me. I would go there. I would get information from them. They would say, can you develop this? And it just kept going. And it's still going. It's still going.
Nice. Can you give us your best interview interrogation case, a case you broke? that's your best one, or are they all up there pretty good? Because every time you make one, it's a great one.
Well, I tell you, well, you know, it could be they're all victories.
I would agree.
Just, you know, I realize that my rate, my compliance rate to get somebody to blow into the breathalyzer increased dramatically. After I got a handle on my communication skills, you know, because they have to consent to it, you know, and what skyrocketed. Probably it was a really, really good one. Do you know what rotenone is? You ever heard of that chemical?
Yeah, it kills fish.
It kills everything.
Okay, so they used to reclaim ponds with rotenone.
Right. Well, a couple of guys got a hold of some of this stuff at one of our state parks, and they took it to one of the rivers, and they poured it in. They poured it in the river and on three different occasions.
It takes all the oxygen out of the water.
But you can still eat the fish.
Okay.
Even though at the time EPA said you can't eat it, so they poured it in there for a catfish. So they would pour it in, it would kill everything, and then they would scoop up the catfish. Well, they did this three times, and we had two suspects. One was a cop, not retired, just a former cop. Mm-hmm. And on the third time, a kid on an ATV spooked them. And they had their catfish, and they threw the catfish. And get this, I got to the scene. I go, you know what? That almost looks like a fingerprint. So I took that catfish to the crime lab, and they got a partial fingerprint off a catfish.
Oh my goodness.
And so you know, it wasn't usable, but nobody's gonna know that, right?
Right.
I mean, that's gonna turn into your face if I have to use it that way in an interrogation. So I figured out who to interview first, knocked on the guy's door, and I told him, I said, we're here about the catfish. And he's got the door open and he's looking at me and he's not closing the door. And I teach in my classes about nodding like this. See how you nod your head right. Like that? That actually creates people. It's absolutely uncontrollable. You can get someone to tell you something by going like that. And so I said, I'm getting the idea. I don't know what his name was, John or Tom or something. I said, I'm getting the idea that you guys were selling this stuff. And I'm really, really upset over that. But somebody said that you're not. And I'm playing this back and forth. And I said, would it be okay if I came in and talked to you about it? Mm-hmm. And he let me in. And I had him in 3 minutes. So when I interviewed the other person, and then he confessed to that. We went to a park office and he confessed to the two other ones. This is a co-defendant. So then I went to the other guy's house, the cop, nothing. He didn't want to talk at all. As a matter of fact, when I was interviewing, he faked having a heart attack. Mm. He grabbed his chest And he says, and I'm having a heart. So I had to call the ambulance and I had to go to the emergency room with him. And it was all a rouge and everything. Of course, he had to pay for all that. And in the end, that was an absolutely unsolvable case. That's the best case. They killed 24,000 fish with those chemicals. And it was the first last case that I know of, unless somebody else did, to get a conviction for criminal damage to state-supported property, because the fish are obviously owned by the state of Illinois. Mm. You know, they paid, I don't know, $12,000 each. I don't know if they ever collected on that. But that I like to tell that case because it was totally unsolvable without confession. Right. Period.
Yeah.
Period. It's a huge case. The fish biologist was involved in that. He actually counted every single one of those fish with a counter. Wow. He's walking, a bull. I think they killed 500 or 600 bullfrogs.
Huh.
That was a really cool wildlife case. Had a bad boat accident one time where a kid went over the back of a boat and he was drinking at the time. And I had to make an OUI case after the fact. So 2 days later, he came in for an interview and I'm talking to him. I went through a whole bunch of questions, built a lot of rapport with him. And in the middle of the interrogation, I asked him, which really was a turning point because it was kind of a tricky question. I said, do you think that you were highly intoxicated, moderately, or slightly intoxicated at the time of the accident? And I'm looking right at him with my raising my eyebrows and staring at him, and he said moderately. so I go, okay, well that'll work right there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He really didn't even know what he said. So that was a really bad boating accident. I mean, the lady lost her the driver lost her teeth, lacerated liver, I think. This is a bad accident. Again, and that person confessed that later on that they were drunk at the time of the accident. That's nice to be able to present that to the state's attorney's office.
Right.
Say, here's what happened. Here's what happened. And so there's just that. Yeah, there's that. But some of the recent ones are great by the officers. Several years ago, a couple of officers up around Chicago called me. They say, we got the case of a lifetime going right now. So they came down to the house. And I looked at it. They said it was a beautiful case. They had all kinds of great information, but the guy had to say, I shot it here. So what it was that, if I can remember this right, I think this, it's called, I forgot the guy's last name, but it was a 36 point deer. It ended up on the cover of North American Whitetail Magazine.
Wow.
So he gave this whole story of how he killed this. Every single thing in that story was true except venue on where he killed it.
Mm.
And I think he said he killed it maybe 20 or 25 miles away from where he actually did. So what he actually did was kill the deer in some sort of a refuge or a hunting without permission. Mm-hmm. Other guys around this place where you couldn't hunt, they were all hunting this deer and there was a picture of it.
Mm.
And when they saw, when they saw the picture on North American Whitetail, I guess they go, well, that's the deer that lives here. You know, he doesn't live 20 miles away.
Wow.
So they went to his house and we went through the whole thing. We practiced interrogation in my kitchen for 4 hours.
Nice.
I would play the suspect and they would interrogate me and I would have them interrogate each other. They were really, really skilled interrogators, really skilled. And when they finally went to the guy, they knocked on his door, they went around his room and they talked to him about his other deer. And then they finally moved him outside and they told him in some form or fashion that his deer was not legal. See, he had to stick with the story, right? Because it's in North American Whitetail. Mm. There's nothing he can do. He's stuck to the exact same story.
Right.
Which was great leverage. And they got him to confess, which led to I don't know how many states that went to. So that I think that deer was seized.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right. and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
I think the vehicle might have been seized as well. That was a really cool case to be involved in.
Yeah.
And then one last one spun off that one of the same.
I just got a comment on those officers. That was a great idea to come use you and sharpen your skills before you went into that situation, because you know you want it so bad. Like you said, a case of a lifetime, and they say, geez, we're going to go see Jeff Bale, sharpen our skill set, and then we are going to be honed and ready to go into that interview and to pull this off and the success. So, great that you were able to do that for them.
Yeah, sure. And ultimately, it was their way of communicating information, but there was probably something in that 4 hours of training that popped out during their interview.
Just sharpening up.
I mean, they had a cell phone ping. I mean, they knew exactly. They had the guy. They had him. But he had to say, I lied here. This is the real truth. And then another one, it was later on that year that he had somebody work for one of these big companies, these real estate hunting companies. And he had killed an illegal deer up in the Chicago area. And he was heading to interview this guy. And he had said, and this was a number one traditional bow kill in Illinois, another record, obviously. The information was that he didn't do it the way he said in the papers and the whole thing. So he went up there, and at the same time, so we worked through that. At the same time that our officer is interrogating him, Michigan officers are interrogating, I think, his brother. At the same time, because this spilled over into a whole like a 2 years worth of deer that they've been coming to Illinois to kill illegally, and this one particular bow, this one particular deer, is just huge. It's never a fork horn, is it? It's always a monster that's involved here.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I remember, this one, he was heading up there to actually go poach deer on Forest Park property. And he, at the hotel that he was staying in, he noticed this monster deer behind the hotel.
Hmm.
So him and his cameraman stuck that bow up his pant leg and went out, and they had a crotch stand, and they stuck it up in a tree, and they killed that thing.
Hmm.
And then they turned it into this traditional. So it was all illegal. So the officers, the investigators, traced it all the way back. Just fantastic information to all these deer that they kill over the years, and half of them are up in Michigan.
Wow.
So at the same time, interrogating the suspect here, they're interrogating the exact their brother up there, and they had interrogations going on both ends. I think they seized over 50 deer, Wayne, in that case there.
Wow.
And obviously that's how it works,
Mm-hmm.
So I tell the young kids, I said, I know you're going to be making some really cool cases off social media. It's going to be easy. It's just like watching somebody shoot something, and you're right there. Mm-hmm. There's an untagged deer. There's whatever. You're going to get a good say, but what about the other ones that they did for the last 3 years? That's where your interviewing and interrogation skills are going to come in, and
yes,
communication skills. How you make those huge, huge cases out of one fish,
mm-hmm,
one fish. I want you to be able to go into the freezer. Just a quick story. I was had a deer case one time, and I'm working the scene at 3 o'clock in the morning, and here comes a car that was driving next to it, and so we stopped them, and they were coon hunting. They didn't have any coons, but they were training their dogs out of season, and I got the idea that they had been doing this before. So when they left the seat, I called an officer, got him up out of bed across the river. He was waiting for them when they got home. That officer got a consent to search and took 25 illegal raccoons out of their freezer.
Wow.
Because it all stemmed because the body language was bad or something in the middle of the night. I was working a deer case. This is just another serendipity type thing. It's fun at the talking like this, and even when I'm teaching, makes me really want to go back to work.
Yeah, you get all fired up. I know the feeling.
I wish I could. Yeah, that's too long ago though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and as you talk, it just keeps reminding me, you know, I worked with a colonel. We were patrol partners side by each, and he came up with a case, great interviewer, like 13 deer out of one case, and, you know, over the course of that 3 years. Yeah, yeah, and we never had a body of a deer. We did search warrants and everything, but he got confessions from these people, and I just blew my mind how many confessions and how many details they knew and could come up with. And there's another one. And which led them, every time he interviewed someone, led them to another person. And he was just relentless. I used to, and I'll say this on the podcast, I used to name him the Beagle, because when he got that scent, he wouldn't let it go. I remember doing cases. We do cases right till the next day.
Yeah.
That would be knocking on doors at midnight, you know, doing interviews. Because of that first 48, he really believed in that first 48. If we had something hot, we had to jump on it. First 48, that's when most of the cases are solved, the first 48 hours. And we were on it and working hard and getting everything, all the answers that we could for that. So, and then we became very good working together. So we'd interview and I would stop and take a breath and he would start in, and the same thing. And your brain's always working, as you know, you're double teaming. I loved working as a team, because as soon as it was time for him, I already had questions built up in my mind. Like you said, that interviewing, the length of time, sometimes it's the difference too. It just breaks it up and gets you thinking about their answers when you're engaged in that conversation.
Yeah, you got to be quick on the, you know, on the fly, that just to be able to change on the spot, because they usually interrogations, you know, they go sideways in 10 seconds and they're going off one way and you're all prepared for something else and that type of thing. And it really is like when someone tells you or tells the officer that what they did 3 weeks ago illegal. I mean, it's just crazy. It's like he was sitting right there.
Yeah,
right there. One of my a good friend of mine, Andrew Kyle, who's an Iowa officer. I think he's been through my class 5 or 6 times. He's an excellent officer. So he called me, I think it was last year, and he's on a traffic stop with deer cases. And I told you earlier that I became sensitized to this body language. Mm. You know how people are. You know. And I learned that body language changes, that means that they were in one emotion here and now they're in a different emotional state here. And then you're supposed to ask your question, why were they in this emotional state and now they changed to this one? And he picked this up during this interview. He said, there's something wrong here and I can't figure out. And I think he stayed there 30 minutes trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that it was an illegal deer that this guy had killed over salt, a big deer, as I recall. That's what he was worried that Andrew was going to ask questions about. That's where the negative body language was coming from on that traffic stop.
Yeah.
And he was able to pick up on the fly and solve a case. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like solving a case made out of nothing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Seinfeld, a TV show, you know, a show about nothing.
A show about nothing.
And those are the great ones that totally unsolvable. I try to teach in my classes all these different cases. They're actually solvable. All I have to do is knock on the door and have enough guts and the drive to say, I'm gonna see if I can't solve this case.
Absolutely.
That's what got me going. Even if it was bad.
And when you make your first case out of nothing, other than an interview, boy, that just fires you up to continue on, Jeff, doesn't it? To the next one.
It does. The ultimate one that I remember was a this is just a crazy case that I was just driving around. I see this guy shooting pigeons. So I go up and talk to him, and in Illinois, you got to have a firearms owner's identification card. So I'm just chit-chatting with him. I didn't really care too much about that. I just want to see what's going on. And he said that he was here. He says to me, I was here last week. And when he said I was here last week, he reaches up and he touches his nose. And I go, well, what the heck was that all about? See, he's the one that he said, I was here last week, and touches his nose. So he was in one emotional state and he goes to a different one. I go, okay, I didn't ask the question. He just caused that. So I said, on the fly, I go, yeah, I know. And he goes, I said, that's why I'm here today. And then he starts falling apart, Wayne, non-verbally. He starts falling apart. And I'm talking to him and talking about finally, he finally admits, he says, he goes, well, he goes, I shot one. I go, okay, tell me about it. He says, well, it was just swimming by. I shot one. And I have no idea what he's talking about. He just said, I shot one. And I, of course, I can't ask him because now the jig's up. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I said, do you have it? He goes, I still have it. It's at home in the freezer. And I said, how long would it take you to show that to me? He says, not too long. I said, can we go look at it? So I'm driving to his house and I pull in the driveway and I'm going into his house and I'm going to search for something. I don't know what I'm looking for, but he goes downstairs and I remember how dark it was down there. I go, man, this is a little freaky. And he's going over to this freezer and he's going to open the freezer. I have no idea what's in there. And he opens a freezer and he's got in a plastic bag, a muskrat. And he has shot a muskrat swimming by. Because when he said it was swimming by, well, that could have been a duck or fish or anything. So yeah. this kid, because he touched his nose, and I was able to see that because I had sensitized myself to all these nuances through John Milner and teaching and all these great instructors. I was able to see that and just a little push, it wasn't accusatory. He goes, that's why I'm here. And then he started falling apart. That's just crazy. And I remember thinking, driving away, I said, that was really good. that was, you know, a $75 fine, right?
Oh man. I love it. I was on patrol once and the week before, and this is like you said, a week before, I'm watching these guys fish. Well, a guy and a girl, a blonde girl and a guy fishing on a pond, and they're too far away. I'm in the cruiser. I'm not going to be able to check them. The next week, same time, Saturday, I check. There's a blonde and a guy fishing on the same boat, and they're near the docks now. They're near a dock. So I swing down, I get out on the end of the dock and call them in. Hey, I'm like, check your fishing license. And she doesn't have a fishing license. So I start to write her and I said, you know, I could write you for last week too, because I'm sure you didn't have a fishing license last week when you were fishing too. And like you said, the whole demeanor changes. And I could remember, this is drastic. And his demeanor changes and hers. And she looks at him and she starts saying, who the blankety blank did you have on this boat last week? And it went downhill really bad from there. I still wrote the ticket, but I got out of there as quick as I could because he was going to get, So it was pretty interesting, but that was a dramatic change in body. You know, when I said I could write you for last week, you know, when you were fishing here last week. So, because you didn't have a license, then I'm assuming, and just the whole shock on both of their faces.
Well, I know that's pretty good. They don't know. A person can only control their body language for a very small amount of time before something reveals it, and that's the trick behind this. That's how I was taught to teach myself is how to be so sensitized to these little nuances of movement. I mean, every warden that drives down the road, they can see a vehicle that's back in the timber a half mile away. And right. They only saw it for 2 seconds. It's there. It's because you've trained it. When I was a city police officer, instead of getting out and making sure all the doors were closed, I could shine the spotlight from the squad car and I could see the reflection back from the deadbolt that's thrown through. I didn't have to get that out. Just a little trick there.
Yeah.
So everybody can learn this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. I had a bald eagle that was shot back in 1985 and it was just a dead eagle. That's it. Immature bald eagle and zero evidence. Jerry Summers, who was Fish and Wildlife agent, he lived right here. He's the pilot. So at the same time, there was a homicide in Peoria, and I saw what they did a week later to the day when the body was found. All day long, the police department set up a roadblock, and they interviewed everybody that went by during this time frame. I go, I'm going to try to do that. So I got permission from my boss and others. So Jerry and I set up a roadblock. Not really rope. We just stopped everybody on this road for all day long. And what I was doing was I was testing the body language. Who's different than the last one? Mm-hmm. And it was towards the end of the day, and somebody came up, and we told him what was going on, and I'm interviewing the guy, and his passenger was looking at me, and his body language is he's flunking. So I turned my questioning to him, and then he really started to flunk. I go, there he is. This guy, at the minimum.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
At the minimum, it's bothered by the questions about the eagle. Okay, that's how you have to look at it. At the minimum, where it seemed like the rest of them were not bothered like that. So I got his name, and sure enough, it came in. This guy was, he had guilty knowledge. His brother-in-law had shot it. That's what the information.
And that's the uncomfortableness of it.
This was all because his body, he flunked the body language test, because I would ask certain questions and see and look at the reactions compared to the other 50 people I talked to in the last 6 hours. And I go, there's something wrong here. And, you know, I went to his house and I read him his rights. I probably didn't have to, but I did. He wouldn't talk to me. And I never did solve that case. Still there. Yep.
Yeah,
that's a game warden wants to solve all bald eagle cases. Like the ultimate.
I had one very similar, Jeff, that it wasn't solved. It did same things, never developed a suspect. So, but yeah, like I said, the cases that stick with me are the ones I didn't solve.
Right. But I certainly learned from that. You know, from the body language. I go, well, this structured approach here,
right?
This rather than random gut way of interviewing people, just throwing out questions without watching.
Now let me ask you, because I always found this, reading them their rights has a tendency to shut them down. So I always made sure that when I did an interview, it was, you know, so they wouldn't think it was an interrogation to a point where the rights were kicking in. As a matter of fact, when I had somebody in the cruiser, I would tell them, I don't want to talk to you, which, as you can imagine, just made them mad and they would talk more. So, and I would regurgitate several times through the course that I don't want to talk to you.
Let me say this. Yeah, I was, John, he taught me how his phrase when he was a detective before he became police chief. He taught me, I can't discuss the evidence with you unless I read you this, which was a really slick way of doing it. You know, Miranda obviously is pretty easy. As far as it's just custody and questioning, that's all it amounts to. But you don't have to do it, you know, unless they change it this morning. You don't have to do that if the guy leaves. And that's what I used to do, is call him in for an interview, get a confession, and then write him a ticket a week later.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that way you wouldn't have to worry about it. And if I can tell you one more about this, the nuances. We used to have a deer check stations, which actually I started with. I was on the internal advisory board, and we got together and we got deer check stations in Illinois, where when you shot it, you had to show the government the kill. Excuse me. So in addition, one of the state parks also had to have, you had to log in, log out. So I picked up the sheet of paper. There was like 7 or 8 names on there. And on the sheet of paper where people, they check in and they check out, there was a little spot of blood. And nobody on that sheet showed that they had killed a deer. So I started with the top. I knew all these hunters. And I went to the top. And as I recall, it was towards the bottom. And I was running body language and visual polygraphs with these people who's, you know, and I was pretty much say, you know, I'm here about your deer hunting today at the park. Well, if you're factually innocent and there's nothing going on, you shouldn't have anything. Well, one of them, he reached up, touched his nose, backed up and went like this, puts his arm like this. I go, that's him. That's him right there. And I let him go. I took to the whole thing, asked him to come outside. And I said, where's the deer at? And he goes, okay, I'll show you. So he had shot a deer. He didn't clean his hands off right, did he, Wayne?
He
dropped that little piece of blood on that, and that told me somebody on that sheet probably had killed a deer. So I'm going to run some polygraphs on these guys as I talk to them. And I tell you what, it really works.
Yeah.
You can do it subtly where you're not accusing people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not saying how many more ducks do you have in the blind right now? It's not as in your face as that. It's just a total talking. And I had you ever heard of Columbo?
Yeah. I watched Columbo quite a bit. Yeah. He had a good demeanor about him.
He does. I had a Columbo style. I didn't know I had that style, but eventually I decided that's my style is kind of a buffoon. And, you know, of course, at the end of the show, he says, oh, by the way, you know, and that's mm-hmm. because he hasn't revealed anything at the front of the show.
Right.
That's kind of how I started doing things after I got a handle on this, you know, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years, 5 years into my career. I said, this is a lot better, the more structure to this. And it's just there. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, you're a deer hunter. You have structure to your deer hunting. Mm-hmm. You know what you're going to do. I have structure to my deer hunting. That's what I put into this system here. And it's never gone away. It's just there. Years ago, I joined a deer butchering club because I really didn't hunt when I was working. And I'm just shooting the breeze with everybody in the butchering club. And one of the guys says, he goes, you know, you ask questions a little funny. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, I don't know. He says, I can't put my finger on it. and I go, that's probably some of my training that's coming through here. I said, I'm not trying to interrogate you. So it was kind of cool though that he picked that up.
Yeah,
I can't even put my finger on how I was doing it, but that's probably not a good thing, is it?
No, probably not with your friends.
No, that's a good thing. So that we had a good laugh over that. So
I'm sure your wife's used to it.
Yeah, she goes, quit using that crap on me.
Well, I really appreciate you spending some time on the Warden's Watch podcast, Jeff. And, you know, Jeff Bailey from Illinois and Bailey's and Associates is your business, and you do training for everybody on interview and interrogations, correct?
Yeah, it's the business is forensic interviewing and interrogation techniques for conservation officers. I teach 3 or 4 different curriculums. I teach all the way from 3 days to five days, recruit classes. People that go through my classes are eligible to enroll in the master class in conservation interrogation.
Nice.
And that's a very small class, 13 people. It's one-on-one training for 2 days. All we do is practice how to interrogate, review confession research, lots of videotapes. It's pretty intense. I'm exhausted at the end of those 2 days. That's the class, Wayne, that I never had when I was working.
Right.
I always wanted someone to actually critique me, a trained instructor. So I built that into my system, and I've been teaching that. I used to teach the police officers for the mobile training units here in Illinois. I had a 2-day interrogation class that I did for them. So the idea behind that is that, okay, it's kind of like, you know, we maybe go to the classroom for firearms training, and then you go out to the range and learn how to shoot. Well, that's what the master class is all about, is that, okay, I'll send you out for a year or so or whatever, and then you come back, and now we're actually going to shoot. We're actually going to practice interrogating. And like I said earlier, the two things that show up in that master class is that the officers typically run out of things to say, which is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. You got to keep on going. And the second is eye contact. I'm always saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, put your eyes up. Put your eyes up. Keep looking at me. Keep looking at me. Keep looking. Right. Just constant barrage of them because it's so important. Mm-hmm. When we interview somebody, we don't want to really stare at them. You know, that's intimidating, isn't it? To have somebody actually stare at you
right
in the interview. That's all different during an interrogation. During an interrogation, you are staring at them, and you make them dip their eyes below horizon, not your eyes. And that helps when they want to surrender and give you the secret. So those are the two classes that I teach now. I also teach school administrators, and it's a one-day class. I started that in 2011.
Nice.
I didn't know you know this, but kids lie to their teachers.
No way.
I never did, so no. I'm not sure where that came from. So all my family are all educators, and they kind of say, why don't you see if you can retool this for us? So I did, and I tell you what, they are so much fun.
Yeah.
These teachers, because they do not get any kind of body language training whatsoever. No. But they're totally like kindergartners with their wide eyes, and they're totally sucking up all this information. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to have them email me with a case that they a case that they made, you know, somebody setting off the fire extinguisher or something like this, you know.
Yeah. Okay,
it's the same, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely.
And so that's really fun to teach them. My first class, I had 40 in the class, and I wasn't used to this, Wayne. I wasn't used to a room full of suits and jewelry.
Mm.
That's not typically in police training. You don't have that. A lot of camouflage, you know, and shorts and stuff, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I was really enjoying it. I go, boy, I was really nervous. Uh-huh. I really was. But once I realized, you know what, the reason that they're here is because they want to learn. They haven't seen any of this. And great evaluations. It's a different prong, and I learned things from the school administrators that I'll dip into the master class and the recruit training and that type of thing. And so that's and then I developed another one just for teachers, reading faces just for teachers.
Huh.
So the teachers will come in reading faces. You know, that's a 6 or 7 hour class. So it's a lot of fun. I really do like the recruit classes. On the long classes, we have volunteers come in and they tell stories that are all true or all false for 2 days, especially on a 40-hour class. And someone will come in. One scenario I really like to have is that one of these two people had their appendix removed. Which one had had an emergency appendectomy? And one of them is telling the truth. So before the person that had the surgery tells the other person all about it. Just like with a wooden mirror out there, you know, this is what you need to tell the warden.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so much fun to watch them, and they have to grade people and everything. After 2 days of realizing just how hard it is, because these are really low stake lies, there's nothing, they're not going to lose anything by lying. And that's a lot of fun. And that's something that I developed with, I had a 2-day lie detection class that I taught for the police officers at college campuses. And I would have drama students come in, sociology kids come in, psych kids come in and tell stories, and all true or all false. They had to figure it out. So I dumped it into the longer programs. But that's what I do now. They do tell me, though, that I will not be able to teach from the nursing home. So they're going to have to get a hold of me here soon.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. You know, you've taught from Alaska to Florida and had a lot of influence, and still do. So I'm very happy that you joined us and share some of those stories with us, Jeff. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great. I appreciate it.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.